Welcome back to Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott Wolf, Vic Nizar here with you. Jamie on the morning show. Trant's taking a maintenance day, so you got us for the next 90 minutes. Kevin Woodley going to join us in a matter of moments. We'll talk about Kevin Lankinen, Artur Shelovs, Thatcher Demko. They play goalie for the Vancouver Canucks.
Let's talk about that Igor Shesterkin pass, too.
Oh, yeah. That was a great
Igor
pass.
Carlson. Oh, my goodness.
Woo! By the way, this hour of Canucks Talk brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel offers industry-leading heli forklifts and engineered racking solutions. Visit them online at racksteel.com. One thing Drance and I have been talking about this week is, like, are you confident at all in Artur Shelovs enough to start him one game on this road trip if you don't get Thatcher Demko back at some point? The only game we looked at is like, maybe, but even then, like, depends where you are in the standings.
Is it going to be the same one I'm thinking of?
Islanders?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the only one.
It's the only one.
Because at least it gives you the Monday to Friday break there for Lankinen.
Yeah.
But, man, like, each point is so valuable right now.
Yeah, especially, like you didn't fully lose out on points yesterday, but it was a bit of a swing, so now you're going to have to play catch-up even more. Blues got an easy schedule as well. We'll get into more of that as the show goes on. But right now we go to the phone lines. It is Kevin Woodley, a presentation of White Rock Hyundai. Thanks for taking the time, Woodley. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to see what awaits us tomorrow morning. Nice to get your work day out of the way at 10 a.m. I kind of dig that.
I was
all
just
for the afternoon games.
I was saying the same thing, but Bick in the break was like, I'd just rather work at night.
It's a routine thing, Woodley. I'm just used to it. Now, I guess an away game is different than a road game, but I like working the night games at Rogers Arena.
There's no such thing as a routine in the season for us, Bick.
Yeah, that's fair.
I got
fair.
Nights where it's all day and you're exhausted by 9 o'clock, and then the next night you got to be up till 1 a.m. working. So
that's fair.
Routine's out the window till the season's done, and I guess we'll find out tomorrow. You know how soon that will be. That, I mean, they all kind of feel that way, don't they? Even if it's not. I mean, the reality is they could go on a run and roll off a bunch of wins, and what happens tomorrow won't matter, but it sure feels like life or death every day today, and I'm imagining that's part of what they're battling against, the highs and lows that come with being in the playoffs, not getting too caught up in those moments in season.
Yeah, and it's a pivotal road trip, and we were talking before we brought you on about how the Canucks kind of approach their goaltending on the 6-game road trip, and it feels like it's obviously going to be Lankinen heavy, but last night was his 8th start in 15 days. He hasn't really seemed, at least from my eye, to be feeling full effects of that or deteriorating. But what are you seeing in Kevin Lankinen's game lately?
Well, at the end of the day, the start he had to the season is one of the biggest reasons they're even in this race, because he was sensational, like top of the league. In terms of adjusted numbers for the first couple of months, that's dropped off. And I think inevitably it was going to, because the type of play he had early on was the type of play that wins you Hart trophies, right? So some of that was sort of inevitable. I feel like there's been a couple of games here and there where you see signs of the fatigue, but overall he's handled it really, really well. Like, this is 8 of 9 tomorrow, or 9 of 10. That's a lot of hockey for a guy who's never played this much hockey. I think it would behoove them to find a practice day here, and maybe that happens on Sunday in advance of Monday's game against the Devils, because I think that's the only thing keeping Thatcher Demko from returning. Now, I could be wrong there. They've played this pretty close to the vest, but in watching him in that full morning skate on Tuesday, you know, that looked like full go to me. It didn't seem to be anything that he wasn't doing. The problem with morning skates, and he's now had two of them where he's pretty much had his own net, is it's only rush drills. There isn't any of the intense 5-on-5 in-zone scrimmage style activities that are sort of required before you can hop into a game. Like, you just have to, you never get full live ammo in practice as a goalie, but at least you can get closer to it. And that's the only thing that I can see missing. And unfortunately, with no practice day today, I can't see it being tomorrow. But everything I've heard is he is really, really close. And part of the challenge right now is they just do not have a practice day to get him those reps.
What are the factors that you consider when a goalie is shows that he's capable of playing the amount Lankinen has. Like, what physical factors, mental factors do you look at and say, okay, he's capable of now playing 45 plus or whatever number you consider to be like the 1A?
I guess at the end of the day, how you handle it the first time through, and for the most part, he's handled it really well. You know, on the season as a whole, after last night, he dipped ever so slightly below expected in terms of his numbers relative to environment. And that might surprise some people. The reality is he's been a lot better. Like, we know what he's meant to this team. Mm-hmm. But sort of as the workload has piled up, there's been more of the sort of average moments. There's also been games like Winnipeg where he makes, you know, momentum, game-saving stops on point-blank chances, on rebounds. The guy competes his ass off. He never stops battling in there. And a lot of those sort of high-danger saves that he makes to keep them in games early, or in that case, to prevent the Jets from coming back and tying it at three and allowing the Canucks at the other end to, you know, finish the period up by a couple. You know, he's brought those throughout. You sort of see the sort of mid-danger and some of the low-danger that have piled up more often than not when he's fatigued. And yet, like I said, like that game against Winnipeg, the one against Minnesota was all him. Like, that was a goalie win through and through. You know, and it's tough too. It's tough to be a goaltender when your team doesn't score for you. And he's had to battle through that as well. So there's way more good than bad. But at the end of the day, is the sort of the stats tell a different story in terms of it's been a little closer to league average of late. And I think part of that is going through it for the first time. At the end of the day, you're learning throughout this process. And if you can survive it and thrive at times in the midst of it, as he has, that just means that the next time through, you'll be better prepared and more likely to succeed in it. So at the end of the day, a lot of the times it's until you've done it, you haven't done it. And there was that sort of was true of him and being a 1A. Now he's done it. He's done it at, you know, kept his head above water for the most part, delivered huge moments within it. And so you move forward. Might he prepare a little differently for next season, knowing this, knowing what it's like? Might he manage some of his rest days versus his practice days differently next time when he's playing 9 of 10? There are little lessons along the way that you learn your first time through that will benefit you moving forward.
How important is it on this road trip in particular, Canucks playing every other day, morning game tomorrow? They do get the benefit of, like, hey, being in the same New York area for the next three games, so not as much travel. But how important is it to find a way to get, hopefully, Thatcher Demko in, but even Artur Shelov's in for a start? I know the confidence might not be there, but I would find it really difficult to see Kevin Lankinen start all six games on this road trip.
Well, like I said, like, unless I'm missing something from what I saw at practice, I don't think we see Artur Shelov again, because I think Thatcher Demko's close. So I could be wrong, and that's not any inside information. That's just what I watched. And I would think, and I would imagine that having, I believe they've got a scheduled practice day for Sunday, and then that is the one benefit of the early game tomorrow. Jokes aside about being good for us in the media to have our day over with by noon or shortly after, the reality is it gives them all afternoon. And as you said, staying in the same area to have a practice day on Sunday to get Demko the reps he needs to be able to say, hey, I'm good to go or not. But I expect we see him before the end of this trip. And I would suspect, given the nature of the standings and how it's gone for Artur's this year, we see him ahead of Artur's. And I would expect that, you know, if it's early and he's in form quickly, and I have a hunch that will be the case compared to his other returns this season. Like, I think he found something in mid-January in that Edmonton game and carried it through to the injury on February 8th against Toronto that will be easier to rediscover this time than it was for him to find it after missing so much time earlier this season. Like, I think everybody saw in those 4.5 games or 4 1/3 games, old Thatcher Demko. And I think he's discovered something that'll allow him to get back to it a lot quicker. And so, Josh, it may not just be one. It may be two. And the beauty of the Vancouver Canucks is if you can get him back to that form within two starts, you're going to get more of early season Lankinen if you've got a balance between the two. And again, that's not disparaging in any way, shape, or form how he's playing now, but early season Lankinen was MVP level numbers. You know, we saw it when he came back in the, even when he came into the Toronto game, rested after Demko gets hurt. How brilliant was he in that game? And it's sort of, it's a really high bar. It's not fair to expect it every night. And it's, but it's sort of a level that's harder to maintain when you're playing every second night. And so getting Demko back sooner rather than later gives you a better chance of getting that Lankinen when he is starting, and is probably, frankly, the best chance of this team actually pulling off this playoff run, because the reality is the offense still isn't there. I know they broke out against Chicago, big deal, worst team in the league. Winnipeg was more impressive, especially off the rush. But last night against the St. Louis Blues, they had three high-danger chances based on ClearSight Analytics math. And they scored on three mids. Like, they got away with a goaltender who let in some he probably shouldn't, and most often doesn't. And for everything good the Blues have done, their goaltending has been very average. Hofer's actually outplayed Binnington since the Four Nations break. And so they took advantage of that. You're probably not getting that against Shesterkin tomorrow, although the Rangers are so bad defensively, it might not matter. You might get it on Monday. The best break the Canucks could get right now on Monday going into New Jersey would be Jake Allen playing the Devils' next game. I assume they play tomorrow, haven't looked. And them getting Markstrom on Monday, because since the Four Nations and him coming back off injury, statistically he's been one of the worst goalies in the National Hockey League, and Jake Allen's actually been top five. And so that would be a break for them to get their old friend Jacob Markstrom on Monday compared to Jake Allen. But they're going to need some of that goaltending themselves. You know, the Blues too, right? For all the attention on Binnington, Hofer's been really good. They're getting good starts out of both guys, and the Canucks are going to need that down the stretch. And that's why I think if you can, you get Demko in there as soon as he's comfortable.
It is Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott-Wolf and Bick Nizar joined by Kevin Woodley, In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. We have gotten a question a few times throughout this week that I just don't know the answer to, and so I'm going to ask you, because we got it again today. Why doesn't, it might be different for goaltenders, but why doesn't Thatcher Demko go on a conditioning stint in Abbotsford?
Probably, from a practice environment, considering the fact this team hasn't practiced, and that might be one of the key things they're missing, it's actually maybe a fair question from a playing a game standpoint. Like on that last homestand when Abbotsford was also in town, I don't know how many practice days they had either. They had a pretty heavy schedule. From a playing the game standpoint, it's a really good question. But the reality is it's a totally different game for goaltenders down there. It's a game of mistakes, a lot more mistakes than you see at the NHL level. As a matter of fact, a lot of guys will tell you the performance may be harder. The shots are better. The players are faster. The skill is higher level in the National Hockey League. But in terms of being able to read the game and anticipate and connect the patterns of the game in front of you as a goaltender, which is so crucial, different guys rely on it to varying degrees, but everybody to a certain extent needs to be able to read what's happening in front of them, be ahead of it, courtesy of those reads and anticipation. It is easier in the NHL because guys are where they're supposed to be, and for the most part, they do what they're supposed to do. So for a guy who's been in the National Hockey League as long as Thatcher has to go down and play an American Hockey League game, I think the scramble nature of it, the broken play nature of it, the mistake nature of it in comparison to the NHL, I don't want to say it would do more harm than good, although it could do some if you sort of adjusted yourself to that. But I think it doesn't necessarily help as much as a lot of people might think, especially for a guy like, it's different for Arturs, and they did that. They sent him down to get some reps in. But going back and forth for him is a lot less of an adjustment because he's been there this season and in recent seasons. And for Thatcher, I don't know if you mitigate that with injury risk or not, but at the end of the day, I'm not sure it's enough of the same game to be really, really beneficial. Now, like I said, the practice at a time when the Canucks had no practices, and that's been a big challenge here. If that opportunity was there to get in some reps for 5-on-5 scrimmage, that might have been somewhat beneficial, but I don't even know, cross-referencing the schedule, whether that would have even been possible.
I think there's so much conversation about when Thatcher Demko can come back, and obviously you've detailed just how sharp he looks right now in the skates and everything like that. Is there enough of a runway here to have successful performances for him, or is this scenario is like, because we've seen him come back and look pretty sharp right away. I'm just curious, like, how many reps we're going to need to see, or how many games we're going to need to see before he can kind of reach peak performance.
And that's the question. And maybe I don't know that's a question that they're worried about. I think based on some of his earlier returns this season that, you know, that you could argue there's a reason to be nervous. I think based on some of the things that I understand and in watching him, that that's less likely to be the case this time, that this is more likely to resemble some of his other returns, in part because of how he's feeling and in part because of, you know, sort of finding his game, for lack of a, you know, it sounds like a simple phrase, but he really did find it those final four or five starts before this recent injury. And so as long as he trusts his body and it looked like he was moving like a guy without limitations in that full morning skate that I watched, as long as he trusts his body, I think the reads and the other things that he sort of adjusted in his game will come back much quicker this time than they did in the other times this season. Now the question, because even when he had the back injury and missed a couple starts and then came back and still wasn't quite himself, that was because he was never quite himself before, right? Like it hadn't clicked. It wasn't till sort of mid-January that it finally clicked. I talked about it in the Edmonton game, despite being lopsided, that halfway through that game, it looked like some things started to work themselves out in his game, leading with vision, not reaching with his body, moving as one piece. And I think that'll come back much quicker this time because he's found it. The back injury, the reality is he had some good games, good results going into the back injury in Seattle, but he still hadn't found it. There were still mistakes. There were still stuff on post play and things that just didn't look like peak Thatcher Demko. So that's the risk. Vic, I think you're looking at one game to sort of get your feet wet, and you hope you can get a result in that game. There was a while where I wondered whether it might be the Rangers. I know there's no morning skate, and that might take you out of your routine. But if there's a team on this trip you can beat, you know, with average play, because the reality is they're a tire fire defensively. Is like, this will be like watching the Boudreaux era Canucks. At least that's the way the Rangers have played to this point. I know I did a Rangers show last week, and they asked me, you know, what I thought of Igor Shesterkin's season. Had the magic worn off? Was he done? You know, what's happening to Igor type of stuff? And his adjusted numbers were better at the time than Connor Hellebuyck. Like, they are just that bad defensively. Like, his environment compared to some of the guys near the top of the league in raw save percentage is like 15 to 20 points worse. So add those to his save percentage, and now you're comparing at least closer apples to apples. Right now it's apples to oranges because of how bad it is defensively. And so if you're the Canucks, you hope you can take advantage of that tomorrow morning.
How cool was it to see him make that pass yesterday? He was on some Erik Karlsson stuff there with that sauce over the top right to Lafreniere, and he may usher a new wave of puck-playing goalkeepers.
It is inevitable that guy gets multiple goals in his career. He chucks it like, it's like watching the Sedins throw the puck around in practices back in the day. He throws the puck around like a defenseman. It's unreal to watch. Something the Canucks will have to be wary of. I found it frustrating. I don't know about you guys, but I found it frustrating last night for all their inability to generate off the rush, which I wasn't surprised by. Because since the Four Nations break, the Blues are the second best team defensively off the rush in the entire NHL. They are not giving up rush chances, but they can be had if you grind them down with a forecheck on in zone play. And yet they continuously made brutal dumps that didn't allow them to set up a forecheck because Jordan Binnington handled the puck behind the net and started transition the other way. And I'm like, did none of you guys watch the Four Nations? Like, it was literally his biggest asset and the reason he was a difference maker for Canada, and they kept feeding it to him. So something they need to be better with, because Shesterkin can do the same thing to you tomorrow against the Rangers.
Woodley, before we let you go, I did want to ask, because we saw Connor Hellebuyck start against the Canucks on Tuesday and was a bit of a shaky start for him, and he's starting to get up there again in games played this year, and it feels like the conversation around him is trending in a similar direction we've seen, even though he's put up unreal numbers. Are you concerned about how many games he's playing?
I'm not really, although I'd be honest with you, since January 1st, like his 2024 was one for the ages, like calendar year, like for the ages, spectacular. And that continued through the first half of this season. But since the calendar flipped to 2025, this might shock a lot of people to hear, but he's actually, relative to his environment, he's actually slightly below expected since then. The Jets are a wagon defensively. Now, we didn't see that in Vancouver, and people that watch that game are going to think that I'm, you know, I've been drinking before noon here. But the reality is that his expected save percentage, the environment in front of him, is one of the best in the NHL. Now, you can't punish him for that. It's not his fault. I think a lot of what they do defensively is actually based on their just deeply rooted belief that if they do these things well, he'll take care of everything else. For the last couple of months, it's kind of slipped a little bit. And so to me, the biggest question heading into the playoffs is the same as it was for last year. Can the Jets continue to be that good defensively, especially on the chances that are, and the key word here is relative weaknesses for Connor Hellebuyck, because he's so good at so many things that anything where he's even near league average, like slot line plays or screens, are considered weaknesses, again, relative to how good he is at everything else, teams are going to go after those. If they continue to defend them well, I think they'll have success. Last year in those categories, they went from top three in the NHL to dead last among the 16 playoff teams. If that happens again, then the similar things are going to happen. And everybody's going to point at Connor Hellebuyck, and everybody's going to ask about games played. And honestly, maybe the games played conversation needs to happen because the play has tailed off a little bit here. Although he's the only guy I've talked to goalie-wise out of the four nations that literally just shrugged his shoulders and said, yeah, it was three games. Like, no mental drain. You know, I was a little bit extra, but, like, there were guys that didn't play that needed practices off coming off of it. I think they managed his rest really well. So I don't believe it's a rest thing. But if we have another playoffs like that, it won't matter how much I point out the environment around him collapsing in the postseason. Everybody's going to make that leap.
Hey, Woodley, really appreciate you taking the time, and enjoy the morning game tomorrow.
I am. I think I would, a little coffee.
Yeah, I love
hot tub.
It. Yeah.
Hey, Bick, you should just do the game, coffee and a hot tub, and just call it in.
I'm coming out to White Rock.
Attaboy. We'll just like set up a studio out there, make sure there's no live wires near the water, and we're good, buddy.
We're good. Well, that might make it more entertaining, though. But anyway, no, it'll be good. It'll be good. Thanks, Woodley.
Thanks, guys.
There is Kevin Woodley on Sportsnet 650, brought to you by White Rock Hyundai. Visit the showroom on King George in White Rock or whiterockhyundai.com. That was a subtle flex, hot tub and coffee to watch the Canucks game, because then you know he's just got like a outdoor TV too, or so. What's going on there?
He's set up. You got to take care of the goalies.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
He's taking care of himself there. So yeah, of course.
That's the dream. Hot tub and a coffee to watch a morning hockey game in March. Love it. There's Woodley on Canucks Talk. It is Josh Elliott, Wolf, and Bick Nizar here with you. We've got an open hour here, so you can text in 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line if you want to talk about anything surrounding your Vancouver Canucks. And we'll get into tomorrow's game, Canucks-Rangers. First game against JT Miller for the Vancouver Canucks since the trade tomorrow morning. We'll get into that next on Canucks Talk. Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott Wolf, Bick Nizar here with you. Lena, Zach, producing the show. By the way, Lena and I, new show on Monday, 11 a.m. to noon, Monday through Friday, Canucks Brunch. Get pumped. I'm pumped. Hope you listen. If you don't, that's okay. But I hope you do.
The brunch.
Lots of people texting in, judging our title, saying brunch is only on weekends.
Yeah, I did see that. You know what? And to them I say, open your minds.
Is that true?
Open your mind a little bit.
Also, you can do brunch whenever.
I agree. And if you're unemployed,
yeah, well,
brunch is every day.
Every day is a weekend if you're unemployed.
And we basically are.
The demographic you're chasing is the unemployed crew? Is that what you're just
about? 11 to noon, you got to be fun employed to be listening.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Or, that's, I mean, great. I'm sure people could listen at work too.
The thing is, it's like there are some restaurants that won't serve brunch in the middle of the week.
That's
now,
fair.
You would then just go to a breakfast place.
Exactly. You make your own brunch.
Yeah.
You know, go to a breakfast place and have it during lunchtime. You did it. Congratulations.
But like, what are the hours for breakfast that it transitions to brunch? For the weekend people that are like, brunch is only on the weekend. Like, when does breakfast stop?
I would say
when does brunch start?
Maybe it's because of my McDonald's experience, but for me, breakfast stops at 11. Yeah, exactly. And then brunch is like, if you're having breakfast for lunch, that's between 11 and 2.
I'd even argue 3 o'clock if you're having breakfast food, that's still brunch.
Oof. Yeah, I could be convinced.
I like to push it.
A 2:30 brunch feels dangerous. It feels dangerous. But anyway, show starts on Monday at 11 a.m. Looking forward
to it. Breakfast ends at 11 o'clock, eh?
Yeah, at McDonald's. Yeah,
right.
Well, McDonald's serves it all day now.
Not everything, though. They've got severely limited options. I don't know.
This is a fight I have to fight myself.
I used to be a hotcake guy. Now I would say I'm a... I go every once in a while, I mix in a McGriddle.
Oh, that's
the griddle's good, yeah.
But you got to substitute the weird folded egg for a regular egg, and much better.
Well, you can do that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Secret menu items?
Well, I mean, it's just like, I think it's an open option. It's just people don't do it.
Back in the day, it used to always be the folded egg.
Yeah, I know. But you can be like, hey, I want an actual egg.
You know what? I agree with this from Mike, the urologist in Brockville. We put time limits, but people have different hours of different their days. Within 3 hours of waking up is breakfast.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
So also, I wake up late.
Yeah, so 3 p.m.
I'm a no-alarm guy. So yeah, if you're waking up at noon, you got till 3.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. And you know what? We'll have a podcast, too, that you can have brunch whenever you want. So anyway, starts on Monday. Hope you listen. Josh Elliott Wolf, Lena Sattagian. But right now, it's Josh Elliott Wolf and Bick Nizar.
Brunch is every day when you're in the work-from-home crew. There you go.
That's true. I did actually, before we move on to Canuck stuff, I did want to ask you the question that has been plaguing this show and the morning show, I think, for the past week.
Okay.
What?
I haven't been listening, so I'm
what
concerned.
What day is the first day of the week for you, Bick Nizar?
Oh.
First day of the week.
Monday.
Right answer. He's like, got it right on the money.
Okay, sorry. What are the arguments? Like, technically, the calendar starts on Sunday.
So, to me, it's just like, in your mind, when you think of the first day of the week, what's the first day?
It's Monday.
Yeah, no, it's Sunday.
Some people's lives are bound to the calendar, apparently, but it is absolutely Monday.
I'm a visual thinker, so when I think of the first day, my mind goes to, it just pictures a calendar. Sunday is the first day.
That actually makes me really angry.
I'm sorry. It's just me and Jamie on this hill.
Jamie agrees, too?
Yeah, we'll die on this hill. We will die on
the hill. Is there any reason for outside of the way it looks on the calendar?
No, just that.
Oh,
just that. And like Wednesday to me is hump day. It's the middle of the week. The middle day of the week. The middle of 7.
No, it's the middle of the work week.
Yeah, it's also the middle of the week.
No, if you go Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, what's the middle day?
Yeah, but you go Monday.
The middle of the
you
work
go
week.
Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
No.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Either way, it's the middle day.
Well,
doesn't help your argument.
Yeah, but the week. The week doesn't end just because it's, you know,
but
it's
Sunday
called the weekend.
Sunday is considered a weekend day.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. That's just a generic term they made up. I don't know what to tell you.
And the calendar is an arbitrary.
Nope. I'm dying on my
Sunday.
Could
be any 7 days in a row.
Like, it's just not going to change my head. I cannot be convinced that the first day is Monday.
So on Monday, when we debut our show,
it's the second day of the week. But it's
hey,
like,
everyone, it's the second day of the week.
I will say it's the first day of the work week.
Apparently in France, they line up their calendar on Mondays.
Yeah.
Apparently,
well, those French hooligans are not right. I'm sorry.
I just like the decades of human history trying to figure out the sun patterns and how do we create alignment on dates. And we're like, you know what? Let's put it on this day. And now a new week starts like, oh, generic term like the weekend. Like,
yeah.
No, I think a lot of science was put into when a week starts.
Now
and
we
when
made
it begins.
That up. Yeah, no, never mind. Anyway,
what is the rotation of the Earth? And how many days is there?
I understand.
Let's come
this
up with a generic term like
I'm
the end of the week.
Josh is a flat earther.
Whoa! That is a much larger.
Okay. What is the start of the week name for people that believe that Sunday is the start of the week? Like, is there a
sunner?
A sunner.
You know what? I'm a sunner and I'm proud.
You're either a sunner or a munner.
Sounds like someone who's into the flat sun conspiracy. Oh, he's a sunner.
he's a sunner.
Do you believe in seasons, Josh?
Yes, I believe in seasons. Also, the earth is round.
So
yeah, the first season's autumn, of course.
Oh, what's the first season?
Yeah, see, I was just about to go there. Like, when does the season start?
Yeah, it's spring. Come on. So,
but it starts.
But what is
in,
the first
like,
season?
January
yeah, like all
is
these,
winter.
All these questions are valid.
Anyway, we'll get more into this later. Text in the answer 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line.
February is the first month of the
year.
That's
a much
it's
more
not the first month of the year.
Exactly. You're making my argument for me. This is a much better conversation though, because this is it's a debate. Like, what is the first season? Anyway. 650-650, Dunbar Lumber text line. Keep the text coming in. It is Canucks Talk, Josh Elliott Wolf, and Bic Nizar.
They live in Sunderland, Mike the urologist.
No, it sounds like a wonderful place.
You're
to
a big
visit,
Sunderland guy.
To
hey?
Visit on the first day of the week. When do they play soccer? The Saturdays or Sunday?
No, that's Sheffield Wednesday. It's a whole other thing.
I'm lost. Never mind. Okay, so the Vancouver Canucks, they play in New York tomorrow. The Rangers, they have not been good lately. They had that game against Calgary on Tuesday where the Canucks very much needed them to win. Maybe, well, at the time, I kind of felt like Calgary was still the main threat. Now that might have shifted to St. Louis in terms of the second wild card spot.
Would have been nice if the Rangers, you know, put up 15 shots or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah. They were outshot 35-13.
Brutal.
Against the Flames. And the Flames were on the second half of a back-to-back. But tomorrow is going to be a big, big money on the board game, I would assume, for JT Miller. And his former team playing against him. I think this is going to be a game the Rangers wake up for. I would be very surprised if they come out flat. I would be very surprised if Miller specifically comes out flat. Did you want to get into the IMAC article first, or did you want to talk about your expectations for tomorrow's game?
No, let's do the game first.
Okay.
What about this, like, screams, like, oh, the Rangers are going to get up for this, outside of, oh, it's their new teammates, team.
I think that's the whole reason.
They are playing dreadful hockey.
Yes, but I do think, like, this, we have heard from people in New York, and it seems like JT Miller, probably just because of the nature of how he plays, a veteran guy, 100-point
guy. He's endeared himself really fast.
And I think they're going to look at this as like, hey, we need to show him that, like, we care. You know, like, we're there for him.
Like, part of the reason to go acquire him is for this playoff chase here. And they were trended a lot better as far as results for a little blip there at the start of March. They had a couple of 4-0 wins. And then 4-game losing streak, 2-game winning streak, 3-game losing streak. And it is not nice there.
They're getting booed off the ice too.
Fire Laviolette chants apparently yesterday at Madison Square Garden. So it's not going well for them in any which way. So yeah, it's all great to do it for your teammate. The whole reason you went and got this player is to push you in the playoffs. So this idea, like the motivation will kick in for them for this game. The motivation has been there because their season, like, this is a team that was in the conference finals last year, and their season has been spiraling all year long. And they're now not in a playoff spot are in a spot where they've played more of the games, too. Like, this is a death knell scenario here.
But that's also like, man, if you lose tomorrow, your season might be cooked.
But that scenario is...
That's been
their reality for a while. And so, like, it just feels like they're kind of in the situation where I guess we would have thought the Canucks were going into Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, wow, that Utah game.
Like, you needed that.
Stubbed your toe.
Yeah.
Missed opportunity, but you would have been helpful to win that one. And then they come back Winnipeg. It's like, oh, what happened there? Like, where'd that come from? So it would be such a surprise to me if we got, like, a functional game. They might play hard, but I don't think they're going to play well.
I can see that. I do think they'll play hard. One thing I will say, too, Canucks in morning games, just never fun. So
no, yeah, that's
that's a that might just be a anecdotal thing.
An extra wrench in all of this.
Yeah.
The Rangers, like, they've had this issue for a lot of years. They've got high-end talent. But in previous years, they have attacked the trade deadline to fill in all the pieces on the bottom end of the roster. Mm-hmm. They didn't really do that this year.
I mean, I do think they were like, hey, our big addition was JT Miller, which was a month before the trade deadline. And then when they hit the trade deadline, they were already kind of in the spiral where it was like, I don't know. But, I don't know if we should go all in.
But now you're in the spot where it's like you are trying for a playoff chase. And the traditional thing that they've always done of attack, like Tyler Modak was, whatever it is, just like regular functional players in their bottom six, doesn't really exist this year.
No.
And that's why this environment just has not stabilized at all for this team. And they've got interesting players. Like, I like a Johnny Brodzinski, you know, journeyman style player, but, you know, works hard in the bottom six. But there's a lot of volatility in their bottom six, which in previous seasons, because they've never been the deepest team, but they've solved it by the deadline. That doesn't really exist for them right now.
They're a team that's going to be really interesting come the offseason too, because, like, I don't know, what do you do? Like, how do you fix this? You have so many contracts, and like, your team is aging. I don't know how you make these big fundamental changes if you're the Rangers. Like, it has to be you fire the coach and hope that things work out, I think.
Well, they've doubled down on a lot of things too, right? They signed Trocheck. He's locked up till 2030, 2029. Lafreniere, they've already given a deal to.
Yeah, Shesterkin, they extended. Shesterkin, which is a like, deal. Good choice.
Yeah. Zibanejad, obviously, there. They've just acquired JT Miller, who signed, obviously, for a long time. They'll have to, I assume they're going to try to open the conversation with Panarin, who's a year away. They'll have to get Keandre Miller sorted out. But, yeah, like, there's a lot to do there. And not a lot of flexibility to push it forward. Kind of what we're talking about here in Vancouver, where we chat about, oh, Brock Besser, do you bring him back? It's okay. Like, where's the intention to get better then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, what's the move to actually have impact in your lineup outside of, oh, we'll just play better hockey?
Yeah. Or like it seems like their plan is kind of like, hey, trade Chris Kreider and see what else you can get out there. And it's just, it's not very inspiring for the New York Rangers, who to me are kind of clearly on that downward trajectory at this point in their cycle. On the JT Miller front, though, so started hot in New York, was playing pretty well for a while. He had a stretch there where he had 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 points in, I think, 6 games, if I'm doing the math correctly, 6 or 7 games. And the Rangers won 4 of 5 over that time. So it was over 5 games. That's math proper. But in the last 7 games, has 3 assists and kind of trending down. But that's with the team as well. I know people here, it's odd, like, it just happens on Twitter almost every day when the Rangers play and the Canucks play. Mm-hmm. It's the Pettersson versus JT Miller. And now Pettersson's playing better. He's putting up points, right? 8 points in his last 5 games. Things are trending in the right direction for Elias Pettersson. I don't know. I'm not going to lie. I'm not watching these Ranger games intently. I don't know where things are trending for JT Miller. We've seen him have stretches like this in Vancouver. We know who he is as a player, right? I don't think that's changed in New York, and it probably isn't going to change. We did get a text on the 650, or sorry, it was a tweet from hashtag Canucks fan. They ask, is the whole Miller versus Pettersson thing dead, except for a few people looking for likes and attention? It does. It feels like, hey, it's coming up right now.
No, it's a story for tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a story for tomorrow. But I think after that, like, this is probably a chapter closing point for a while until the Rangers come to Vancouver next year.
We did kind of have that appetizer at Four Nations, even though Pettersson barely played in that game
and nothing happened.
And nothing happened. Yeah. But yeah, like, this one's going to be far more meaningful than that USA-Sweden game.
Especially because, we mentioned it, where both teams are in the standings.
Correct.
Right now. It's a needed game for both teams.
And JT spoke about it too, and he did say that he intends to have some dinner with some guys here.
Mm-hmm. You think Pettersson's going to be there?
TBD.
TBD. Could you imagine if they posted a picture and they were like, hey, we're buds now? That would, I'm like, I would love it. I would love to see it.
Maybe you got the rezzo wrong. It's like, I don't know, so many restaurants in New York. Yeah. Went to the wrong place,
I
guys.
Was confused.
Went to the wrong place.
Also, JT Miller speaking to Sportsnet's triple threat, Ian McIntyre, in an article posted this morning on sportsnet.ca. You can go read it. A lot of quotes from JT Miller regarding the trade and kind of, I guess, what went wrong in Vancouver, but also his time in Vancouver, and he clearly remembers it fondly. Like, he's not holding any ill will towards the Canucks or the organization. He does say, quote from JT Miller, "They created a lot of special memories for me and my family, especially in the playoffs last year. I have three young children, and one of their favorite memories was the fans chanting my name. Probably something I will never get back. But their honesty, their passion, I feel like I pride myself on a lot of the same things the fans in Vancouver do. They're obsessed with their hockey there and obsessed with their team, and they are always blunt. Not to like that would be pretty hypocritical." That's from JT Miller. So obviously I think, especially with this playoff run, it opened the eyes to what this fan base can be to so many of the Canucks, right? Like, that's the thing they came into this year chasing, was that atmosphere and the buy-in from the fans. Because, not like fickle probably isn't the right word, but if you, like, the Canucks were bad for a while, and that can be, when you have a passionate fan base, that can be grating, I think, for a player, because you just want them to be happy, right? You want to go out, you want to play a game that
perform
makes
their
fans
best.
Happy. Exactly. So obviously he has a soft spot for the fans, for the city, all of that. One thing he did say as well, in regards to leaving Vancouver, as he said, "I don't want to get into too much detail, but yeah, I think a fresh start was needed. I've got nothing bad to say about the Canucks or Vancouver as a city. We loved it there. It felt like home, and that's all you can ask for. But unfortunately, this is a business, and in the business end of things, it was getting difficult." I think from the outside looking in, that's a pretty fair assessment.
Oh, yeah, it was obvious to see that, again, like, there were nights where he was producing, and, you know, bottom line is the most important thing. And then there were other nights where, like, we saw back checks, and we saw the same turnovers, and we saw the same things that have played. Like, last year, when he was at his best, it was consistent, it was sharp, it was tenacious, it was ferocious, and he was doing all the things that mattered. And then this year, on top of the absence, again, it felt like, you know, focus slipped from time to time, and we would get bad passes that lead to odd man rushes the other direction. And it was not entirely on him, because the team on a whole was struggling, along with guys like Elias Pettersson. But I think JT got a benefit of the doubt a lot of time because of a certain level of physicality was put into a game. That, like, there were some games where he was really bad. Like, -3, -2 were frequent throughout the course of this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And obviously the team wasn't having success, and the team was expected to take a step. And it was always mentioned by Patrick Alvin and Rick Tocchet, it's like, this is meant to get harder. And we didn't see, like, a lot of the players translate that of, oh, it gets harder, so we'll play better and we'll give more. And it always felt like a push-pull dynamic for the Canucks this season. It probably best exhibited by JT.
Mm-hmm. And he's always kind of been that through his whole time in Vancouver.
He does not hide from any of that ever.
No.
Like, yeah. Even at the end of this piece with Ian McIntyre, says, "I know I'm a good person and teammate. Asked about the Canucks, the tumult of the Canucks season. If there was a more casual, laid-back, happy-go-lucky guy going through it, it might have been fine, but I ain't it."
Yeah.
He has never been shy about who he is, and perhaps through the whole specter of JT's tenure here, perhaps, like, one of the more misunderstood players as far as a personality, because I think we have this cookie-cutter approach at times, so, like, every hockey player has to do the same thing, and it's one of my pushbacks of what people want to see out of Elias Pettersson. It's like, we can let people be people. We just got to see how they perform on the ice. And there has been this constant of, oh, like, JT needs to be smoothed down, and you can't be all fiery all the time. And that's true. It has to be channeled correctly. But at the same time, like, he has constantly talked about wanting to be the guy that plays with the edge.
Yeah.
In a league where it is getting softer and smoother. And a player who's like a traditional power forward we would have talked about years ago would be, you know, 6'3", 220, or 230. JT's 6'1", 220. So even that gets smaller. So now he can win against the smaller players as the league trends smaller in general. So he's going to be play with that edge, and that's why fans like it. That's why he's a desired asset by a New York Rangers team that desperately felt like they needed something like this.
Mm-hmm. 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. This one unsigned, or sorry, from Rosie. I wish he had felt that way 2 years ago and the Canucks had kept Horvat instead of him if he needed a fresh start. I don't think the Canucks have a season like they did last year if they have Bo Horvat instead of
Well, the 2 years ago would have been his Sunday because he didn't know he needed a fresh start until
next. Yeah, so he just had
until
to figure
the Monday,
it out.
He 2 years some later. Time. Yeah.
Well, he had to get to the next week, which started on Sunday. It was a whole thing. and then spring, he was like, "Well, is that the first season? Do I get traded in spring?"
But as far as Rosie's text, like the most frustrating part of all this for me is like when Alvin and Rutherford came in, there would have been no complaints if they just said we want to start over.
Yeah.
And they said
clean house.
Horvat and Miller are going, and we're going to do this around the two young guys in Hughes and Pettersson. Nobody would have said anything.
A lot of people, like myself, I remember being very on board with that.
And in September, they chose that in September 2022, they chose, okay, we're signing JT Miller.
There's a whole Bic reaction photo of it.
Yeah.
The most surprised Bic has ever looked.
The double take. Like, yeah. I got the text and I was like, what?
Yeah.
Is this a thing? And then the tweet's coming out and the announcement's happening.
Yeah.
Go, like, oh, okay. They chose to go down this path. And it obviously didn't work. And it's blown up in their faces here of having to pivot now and try to find another top six center. And that's going to be a difficult task here moving forward. But had they just gone down the path outside of, oh, they should have kept Horvat. It just feels like they were always going to move Bo Horvat.
Yeah. I would.
But like, had they chosen. The we'll find another top six center back then and done the more traditional rebuild, you'd be 2 years into that process, and who knows who you could have found in that time.
Mm-hmm.
But they bypassed that. Now you're now chasing to find that solution 3 years into your tenure as a manager.
Yeah, and the other element that goes into this too is you traded both of your... Like the Canucks 2 years ago had some of the best center depth in the league, right? Elias Pettersson, JT Miller, Brock Besser, or no, Bo Horvat. Elias Pettersson, JT Miller, Bo Horvat. Brock Besser is a winger. But the other element is you traded both Bo Horvat for the picks that ended up being flipped for Filip Peronik, and then you trade JT Miller for the pick that ended up being Marcus Pettersson, and you bring back Victor Mancini. It was a very... obviously, defense forward mindset with both of those trades, but that leaves the Canucks now in a position where you went from having some of the best center depth in the league, arguably the best, to now you have 1.5 centers, I guess. Mm-hmm. And that's a tough spot to be in. It's going to be the theme of the offseason for the Canucks is finding someone who can come close to replacing what JT Miller brought you. We'll see what they can do, and we'll see how they approach that this offseason. It's going to be a tough task for Patrick Alvin and company. On the other side, we'll continue talking about the Canucks. Did want to get into some Elias Pettersson conversation. Also, Rick Tocchet, Frank Saravalli spoke about how many teams could be in on him this offseason, how desirable of an asset he could be around the league. We'll get into that next on Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott Wolf and Bic Nizar on Sportsnet 650. Whoa, welcome to Canucks. Welcome back to Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott Wolf, Bic Nizar. Zach, spinning the tunes. Was there a theme for today, Zach, or did you just... Go with vibes.
I just looked up flute for this one.
Whoa! Yeah. This is great.
This is a banger.
This is a good one.
Wow.
I love it. I love it. Zach and Lena producing the show today. You could text in on the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text.
Not sure how I feel about this flute.
Really?
Yeah.
I love it. Coming to you live from the Kintech studio. The thing I love about these royalty-free songs is that I just imagine someone spending hours days even making these songs. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, you know what? I'm just gonna upload it for free. You know what? You love art that much?
We cherish it.
We use it.
Well, they're not, like, I'm sure the artists are getting paid for this.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What?
The artists are getting paid. It's just royalty free for usage.
Is that a I thought
we pay a licensing to get these. It's not.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Like they're professional musicians that do this.
Right.
The only musicians are not the ones that are on the radio selling records.
Yeah. I thought it was just like this was unsuccessful. You know what?
So this is just a library of failed musicians.
Yeah, they're getting paid for their time.
Holy.
What a sad life, though.
I know. I just thought. I thought
that's life, though.
I give up on my dreams. Guess I'll do this.
I thought this was also people like looking for exposure or whatever. And like, I don't know. I assume nobody was getting paid for this. People are getting paid to make these.
What if you're a good composer or a good lyricist or whatever it is, but you have stage fright?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I can never.
You can never be that guy.
But you can still make money off of your music. Hmm. And so you just find different ways to do it.
Wow. Yeah. I guess I was the only one that didn't know this.
You're learning so many things today.
I know. This is a big day. Well,
Monday, the first day of the week.
No, I was right about the previous thing. And also, I think someone texted in. I forget who texted in. Someone said, Persians say that the first day of the first season of the year is spring.
Yep, that was New Year's right. Yesterday. So new.
Yeah, so it feels right to me. I would say spring.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah,
it's true. Everything dies in the winter.
We can all agree
on
winter.
This.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Way to be contrarian.
Well, if he's filling in for Drance, then that actually.
I just think winter is the best season in general.
I'm a big beginning of winter guy. By like February, I'm like, okay. I'm someone that accepts the seasons as they come. You know when you get to summer?
Wait, hey, you said that as if you have control.
What's the alternative?
No. So you know when people
fighting
get...
Fighting tooth and nail against snowflakes?
People
like,
get...
Like literally, like that's not a shot at people that are soft. He's literally fighting the snowflakes. No, November! Not yet!
People get to the end of summer, though, and they're like, oh, I'm going to miss summer so much. Like, I need to hold on to summer. I don't want it to go. And I'm like, you know what? It's time for fall. It's time for me to wear jeans, wear larger jackets, or jackets in general.
Hoodies rule.
And, you know, Reach especially is like, oh, I can't golf anymore. And I'm like, you know what? That's okay.
If it was that important to you, just chase the sun and go golf.
Yeah, go move to Arizona.
You can go to Arizona.
Yeah.
You can golf every day in San Diego.
You know what? You're going to have to quit working here, but that's the sacrifice you're going to have to make if you want to golf year round.
If you want to accept the seasons, you might have to accept some other things.
Yeah, that's how it goes. Anyway, 650-650, Dunbar Lumber text line. Keep the text coming in. On the morning show today, there was a Frank Saravalli Daily Faceoff joins Halpern and Brough, usually on Wednesdays, had to move to today. He did talk about Rick Tocchet and his future in Vancouver and how it is still kind of up in the air. One thing he did mention that seemed to get some traction was there are 7 to 8 teams around the league that are waiting to see if they can get Rick Tocchet for their head coaching job, right? And I know a lot of people here in Vancouver, they're getting frustrated with Rick Tocchet and they think all this offensive issues that the Canucks are having are on Rick Tocchet, and he should be the one that's solving it. They think that Elias Pettersson's issues stem from Rick Tocchet. Essentially, we've gotten to the point of a coach in Vancouver or a coach in any city where fans are frustrated with the coach, and some people want him gone, right? Saravalli saying today that there are 7 to 8 teams that would jump on Rick Tocchet if he was available. So before the show, we were doing some brainstorming.
Let's guess which 7 to 8
teams want Rick Tocchet. And the first one, the obvious one that comes to mind, tomorrow's opponent, the New York Rangers. Peter Laviolette, the coach there right now. You mentioned it. There's fire Lavi, chance. They're bad at hockey. They expect more from the Rangers. It's the obvious, like, hey, this is where you fire your head coach position, especially because, as we mentioned, it doesn't feel like there's going to be a lot of roster overhaul. So you have to do something to sell change to your fans. Laviolette seems to be on the hot seat. Rick Tocchet seems like a fit there.
Yeah, just because it's like they had high expectations this season, right? You're talking about a conference finalist last year, might not go to the playoffs now. Mm-hmm. That just seems like the obvious button to push.
Coaches always get fired in those situations.
The other one that seems obvious, now they don't need to fire someone for it, but Boston. They always have high expectations of themselves. They're not a rebuilding team. Their expectation, like they've dedicated money to Charlie McAvoy, Pastrnak, Lindholm, both Lindholms.
Yeah.
So Swayman,
Zadorov.
Like that's it. You have that outlay to go make the playoffs and go have success. Mm-hmm. That's a team that would strike me as a Rick Tocchet team as well.
Yeah, that one makes sense. So those feel like the two most obvious teams. And then you kind of get into the, like, theoretically, this team could make sense. The Nashville Predators are probably in that tier. They're probably the highest of the tier, the closest to graduating to the Rangers-Bruins one, where this year they came into it. Obviously, they were the winners of the offseason, right? Andrew mm-hmm. Brunette, their head coach, felt like they were going to come in and they were going to make some waves in the Central Division. They suck. They're bad. And so that's a position where you have such an underwhelming season that you might want to fire your head coach. And you expect more next season.
Only two seasons. I know it's quick, but like that's the one that kind of stands out to me is a team that would be willing to do it. Because they keep saying, it's like, oh, we're going to take big swings in the draft and rebuild and all these things. And then they go sign 33-plus-old free agents.
Yeah, and they trade Luke Shen for Michael Bunting instead of a pick or whatever.
Alex Carrier gets traded.
Yeah.
Like they've done things that are what competitive teams are trying to do.
I don't know if, and this is a separate conversation, I don't know if Barry Trotz is a good GM. But to be determined.
Very much to be determined.
To be determined. So that's a team I would throw in there. I wanted to put the LA Kings in there. You had some hesitation.
Well, only just, okay, what's funny is like the timeline of this, right? Jim Hiller took over February 2nd of last year.
Yep.
There have been 15 head coaching changes since 2024.
Almost half the league.
Almost half. So Rick Tocchet right now is the 10th longest tenured coach in the league. He has not coached 190 games in Vancouver.
Yeah. That's crazy.
There's
so much turnover.
There's so much turnover that maybe we need to stop and be like, hey, is just flipping the head coach the easiest solution here? Or do you need to actually build something and give some time for these coaches to establish themselves? Or have we just gone too far? Like, oh, change the coach. As if there's 60 head coaches available that are like, oh, this guy's qualified. This is ridiculous. Like, Rick Tocchet's barely been here. And the only guys that have a longer tenure than him are Paul Maurice, Pete DeBoer, John Tortorella, Bruce Cassidy, Martin St. Louis, Rod Brind'Amour, Jared Bednar, Mike Sullivan, John Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah. And so you like Jim Hiller is the guy in LA right now since February 2nd of last year.
Now, if we're talking about Rick Tocchet being that sought after and the qualifications are that good, which I don't necessarily believe they're like unimpeccable, impeachable. Like, this guy's got to be the number one candidate. You're guaranteeing yourself a Stanley Cup. If that's what you're doing for a guy like Jim Hiller, and you're just like, oh, out the door, it would resemble what the Blackhawks did years ago to Danny Savard to get Joel Quenneville in.
Yeah. Yeah. Or it kind of feels like what the Blues did this year, too, right?
To get Jim Montgomery.
They were like, that can be our guy. But again, we're going to go get him.
I would put Jim Montgomery in a different tier because there's been some very successful stretches here.
Mm-hmm.
At the very least, like if I'm a team that has a first-year head coach and I'm making a firing, I think I'd like to do it for a guy that's made a conference final.
Yeah, probably. Speaking of conference finals, the Dallas Stars have made the last two. Is this a year where if they don't get to the final, they're like, maybe we just got to change something? Pete DeBoer, you're out. Rick Tocchet.
It feels so harsh.
I would agree, but that's also, like, what other button are you going to push if you're Dallas? Well, like, I don't even think they need to push a button, necessarily. Mm-hmm. But sometimes people get antsy. Organizations get antsy. They look at it and they're like, maybe this is the thing that solves whatever's going on here. And you bring in a Jack Adams winner from the previous season. That's an easy thing to sell. He probably coaches a style that I think Dallas, that would suit Dallas well, too, suit that roster well.
Mm-hmm.
That could be interesting. That would be one of the, that would probably be the highest end team I look at for Rick Tocchet. Because you look at the playoff picture in the East, I looked at every team and I was like, I don't, none of them are getting fired. Any team that's currently in a playoff position in the East, I think they're safe. The West, the only one that stuck out to me was the Dallas Stars. But I just, I don't know. I don't know.
They might have the luxury of, because if they were still built around Ben and Sagan, you're like, oh, we're running out of time here, and let's just do this. Okay, I can see getting a little antsy. But now you've got Robertson, you've got Johnston, you've got Rantanen, you've got Hintz, you've got Heiskanen, like, you got Ottinger. Mm-hmm. They're stable.
They've got, yeah.
That, we're talking about multiple conference finals for Dallas, and it like that one would be shocking to me.
They're also going to get a tough first round matchup though against the Avalanche. You can sell it like how I would approach it is like, hey, we lost to the Avalanche. Mm-hmm. They're a good team. How they might view it is we lost in the first round.
Sure.
So I don't know. That's the one that would be super interesting to me, and that would be the one if I was Rick Tocchet. And I'm like, oh, I got to choose between the Vancouver Canucks or the Dallas Stars with all the players you just mentioned. I'm probably going to Dallas too. Like, that sounds like a very enticing option for any head coach or any player. Like, anyone that's looking for a job in the NHL, the Dallas Stars are going to be a desirable location to go.
What about Philly? I'm only bringing it up because Rick Tocchet's Philly legacy.
The history.
That's the only reason I'm bringing it up. Right, it's only been three seasons for Tortorella. Doesn't seem like it's on shaky ground. But if you want to re-energize a fan base,
yeah,
and say, hey, remember that guy that you loved? He put fists through people's faces. Had the Philly mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Does that reignite the Philly fan base there?
That could be an interesting one. That would be. Like, is he the right guy for Matvei Michkov, I think, is the answer? Or is the question they would be asking?
Is John Tortorella?
Probably not.
I mean, they were willing to go down the road already.
Yeah, fair enough. So that's an interesting one. The only other ones I kind of put in there. So how many teams are we at right now? Rangers, Bruins, Kings, Stars.
Preds.
Flyers. So we're at six. 7 to 8. The only other ones I would put in there are maybe the Penguins.
Maybe the Penguins, Sullivan's going to last year of his deal.
Yeah.
But it feels like it would surprise me.
And then the other one I'll throw out is the Ducks. Because I don't know how in love with Greg Cronin they are. Because I feel like
I don't know how in love with their entire roster they are.
Yeah, and that's fair. But I think a lot of the discourse around the Ducks right now is like, well, if they had a better coach, things might be going better. I don't know if I agree with that, but they might view it as that, and then maybe you make some other changes in the offseason too. I would love to work in Anaheim.
But so many of these teams have already changed over, guys. Like, that's the thing. It's like we're just flipping pancakes right now.
Yeah. This one, Sheldon from Surrey, noted Stars fan, DeBoer is gone if they disappoint this year. He costed us last season against the Oilers. So Stars fans texting in like that. That's the thing is we from the outside looking in can go, hey, like you guys are fine, but he gets turned up. At
and
a
think of his
point.
Reputation of kind of never being able to get it done. You always get so close with DeBoer, but you'll never quite get.
And when you have a guy like Rick Tocchet, who also has not gotten it done, you gotta jump at that. I'm just kidding. I like Rick Tocchet. I've
stated here, like, I don't understand some of the frustrations from... Yeah. Sorry. I understand some of the frustrations right now of it being low-event hockey. But I think you're expecting way too much for any coach to turn some of these guys from 30-point players into 60-point players.
Like, look at this forward group. And, like, is there realistically any coach that would come in and be like, you know what, I can squeeze more juice from that orange? No. It's like it's a bad forward group.
Well, and even if you did, it would come at the cost of defensive structure.
Exactly. And so that's the thing is like no matter what coach you bring in, you can have your issues with Rick Tocchet. That's fine. I just don't
think... No coach is perfect.
No coach is perfect. And I just don't think it's going to make this big fundamental change that people are looking for. So those are the 7 to 8 teams. We've outlined them. Set it in stone. Those are probably them.
our predicted 7-8 teams.
Yes. One other thing we wanted to get into, it is Canucks talk. Josh Elliott Wolf and Bick Nizar with you for another few minutes. Expansion talk going around again. Insiders Kevin Weeks, Emily Kaplan, I believe Alan Walsh was also tweeting about it. Elliot Friedman talking about it. Feels like it's inevitable that soon the NHL is going to go to 34 teams. The two locations that are out there, Atlanta and Houston. Atlanta 3.0. I've long been a, hey, you need to get back to Atlanta. It's a big market. It's a very big market. TNT based there too. A lot of aspects going into it. I don't think the NHL should expand, but I if they do, Atlanta and Houston make sense. Also, there was talk about like, hey, not only could they get to 34, Kevin Weeks being like 36 might be, that's so many teams.
That's so many. Like, honestly, the league has the most talent it ever has, and yet it's still spread so thin right now. Like, Chicago and San Jose are going to struggle to get to 60 points.
Yeah. Chicago might be the new Sabres, in my opinion. That's a take for a different day. But anyway, continue.
To not even get to 60 points, what are you providing for your fans? I get like, oh, the future. In the present, it is grim. Mm-hmm. And this is routine now. It's been seven times post-pandemic here that a team hasn't reached 60 points. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That is a lot. Since the cap era, it's only happened 15 times in 82-game seasons.
And that's also since the league has expanded to 32 teams.
And the league is rapidly, continually expanding. And I understand chase the money.
Yeah. Like the reported cost would be $1.5
billion. Yeah, it might even be a bit higher.
Yeah.
So that's all well and good. But the product for the worst teams right now is getting worse fast. And if you're looking at 36...
You mean relegation at that point.
Yeah, like that's not a terrible idea.
There's one Stanley Cup, guys. And the Canucks, obviously we talk about it a lot here, they've been chasing it for 55 years. There were times where there was 21 teams in the league, and they didn't win it then. 36 teams. That's so many teams.
It's staggering.
And the thing is, I feel like when they expanded to 32 is like, okay, they can handle this. You know, like the league has gotten to a point where, yeah, now the talent is spread a little thin, but it was still reasonable.
And I will say, like, you do expand in preparation for more talent coming in. And look, like, so much skill is going into the youth development across the sport.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a flood, I think, of good players coming over the course of 14 years. So you do want to prepare for that, of course, at some stage. But man, it's going to lead to some really, really bad teams that have this constant uphill battle all the time to become relevant.
Yeah. I also think if you do this, if you get to 34, you got to change the playoff format. I think you have to have a play-in tournament. I know Drance has been a long proponent of like, hey, play-ins would be great for everyone, great for the league, great for the teams right now that are chasing playoff spots. If you get to 36 teams especially, I don't think you can roll with 16 playoff teams. And it's just like, to me, you got to figure out a way to, especially as the league trying to maximize value, trying to maximize viewership, all of that, you got to figure out a way to keep fans invested as long as possible. But man, 36 teams. So Houston and Atlanta are the main options. New Orleans has been thrown around. That'd be kind of fun, if anything, just for like...
I know people really want Quebec to get a
great
team back.
Travel city.
Yeah, Quebec's not getting a team.
Is extra expansion good news then for Winnipeg? Because you're like, all right, not relocation talk. We can tug the collar on that one.
For now.
Yeah, we're good.
But it's almost worse for a team like Winnipeg, though, because eventually... they're going to be bad, right? You would think at some point. I know they're a franchise that drafts well, tries to be competitive, trades for guys with term, all of that. But the more and more location cities you add, like our players are going to want to go to Houston, Atlanta, New Orleans before Winnipeg. It gets tougher and tougher for them. Eventually, if they do enter a rebuild, then the relocation conversation comes back up. And by then, Arizona might have a new stadium. Arena.
Throw Arizona in that conversation at some stage too. 36. Lucky number 36.
Yeah, good for them. Let's bring it back. Phoenix 2.0, Atlanta 3.0. I'm all in.
Houston 2.0.
Houston. Oh, yeah.
Put another
Houston
team in a Hartford 2.0? Mall.
Yeah. Yes. Get pumped. It is Canucks talk. Appreciate everyone texting in on the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. Everyone listening, thank you to Lena. Thank you to Zach for producing. By the way, Canucks brunch starting on Monday. Add it to your regular show schedule, your show routine. It's an hour. You can do it. 11 a.m. to noon, Monday to Friday. Starts on Monday. Josh Elliott, Wolf, Lena Sahtagian.
So excited for this.
So excited. Pumped up.
I'm pumped up.
I'm jazzed.
Mimosa Mondays. Let's go.
Mimosa Mondays. Off the start. Appreciate Bick Nazar filling in for Thomas Drance.
Utah!
Columbus! The Columbus Blue Drancers. They've sucked lately. We'll leave it at that. Jamie and Thomas back next week in this regular time slot. You'll get them back, I promise. Appreciate everyone listening once again. I've been Josh Elliott-Wolf. This has been Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650.